Editor's note, this show was started to be recorded before Joe Biden announced his selection, or at least it was leaked. So the first half of the show is leading up to what actually became the choice. So you get to go through the process together. Now on with the show. Today's edition of the Derek Hunter Podcast is brought to you by Life Change Tea.
Why go to getthetea.com? Because this important news could change your life. Socrates made a statement saying that all disease starts in the gut. Take care of your gut, and well, the rest speaks for itself. Life Change Tea is a wonderful way to aid in your digestion. Brew it, steep it, drink it, and feel it go to work. We at Life Change Tea have been around for years helping people just like you feel better. Lots of testimonials and lots of happy people. Log on to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Getthetea.com.
All righty. Hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Derek Hunter Podcast for the 12th of August. We've made it to hump day. It's a Wednesday. 2020, in case you'd lost or gotten lost or had been fallen into a dream where you're wishing it were a different year. We got plagues, volcanoes, earthquakes in North Carolina. It's just a mess of a year. Riots everywhere. We're missing the locust, although they are ravaging throughout Africa, I believe. So give it time. We got murder hornets. So, you know, you can have your locusts. We'll have the murder hornets. What a freaking nightmare. Oh, it's another day, another show. We're waiting for Joe to make his decision on vice president. He's as curious as anybody who he's going to pick to be his running mate. My God, has there ever been a more consequential, insignificant event in all of human history? How can they be both? Well, because there's a possibility that if Joe Biden wins, whoever he picks will end up being vice president. Even half of Democrats admit that there's a good possibility Joe won't finish one term, which is a hell of a campaign. Vote for me just to see if I make it. I don't know. I might put that bumper sticker on my car. But it's insignificant in that who votes for the number two? Who votes for the number two in the grand scheme of things? Can't stand the number one. I guess you could look to 2008 for John McCain and people voting because Sarah Palin was on the ticket and had yet to prove herself a complete and total lunatic. It didn't take long after that. But even then, how did that work out for John McCain? I forget. I can't remember. President McCain doesn't seem to ring a bell outside of green rooms at NBC News. Anyway, looking at the betting markets as of this moment, it is Susan Rice by 10 cents over Kamala Harris. I put a couple of bucks on, like 20 bucks on Elizabeth Warren at 6 cents apiece. And then it went down to 4 cents apiece. So I figured, what the hell? For 6 cents, I could make a couple hundred bucks for 20 bucks. Or it's just trying to hold my interest, to be perfectly honest with you. Who gives a damn who Joe Biden's running mate is? Today, I'm going to just quickly go through the possible nominees, just in case, in between me, my recording this and it posting that Joe picks it. Or picks his running mate early in the morning. That's the thing about podcasts, is the second you're done with them, they're out of date. So you kind of got to hedge your bets. But we'll get to that. We'll get to a whole bunch more. We've got some crazy audio for you. The police chief out in Seattle has resigned because the white board, it's amazing, 70% white city, runs the first African-American woman police chief out of office because she's too tough on crime, according to them. They basically stripped her of her power. They cut her pay by something like 40%. It's ridiculous. If it were Republicans doing this, there would be screams and cries of racism. But it's not Republicans doing this, so it probably won't even make the nightly news, because why would it? It's a local story. Such hypocritical scum. Such hypocritical scum. And a whole bunch of other things going on today as well that we'll get to. But since it is Wednesday, we have to do what we do every Wednesday, a contractual obligation to play the pre-recorded interview with the one and only, the awesome Ronnie McMullen from Life Change Tea, talking about GetTheTea.com and Life Change Tea itself. Okay, joining me on the phone is the proprietor of GetTheTea.com. It's the one and only Ronnie McMullen. Welcome back to the show, Ronnie. I appreciate it.
How you doing, Derek?
I cannot complain, and it wouldn't do any good if I did. But I really have nothing to complain about, thanks to my Life Change Tea. I understand you have something special for us this month. What do you have?
I do. It's important to get our bees. The bees are real important for the nervous system. And, of course, the tea, with all the crud, I always call it the world on fire, with all the crud going on, it's kind of stops your digestion. So the tea, obviously, when we've talked about this many times, it's the digestion gets it moving and the tea that makes you go. So also essential bees, which like a B complex, does a lot of great things for your nervous system, does a lot for cardiovascular, and, I mean, it's overwhelming. And then I even threw in the package some bee pollen. And they don't even know the end of the bee pollen because it hasn't been studied. The scientists are kind of stopped because it's so powerful and it goes so deep. So I put all these together in a special. It's on the front page. You go to getthetea.com, scroll down, and there it is.
Get your bees at Get the Tea. You can't beat that. And the ads write themselves, Ronnie. And by the way, if you enter promo code Derek at checkout, you get what?
You get free shipping. The free shipping's going to be on my dime, not yours.
There you go. GetTheTea.com. Tons of great products. Throw everything in your cart. Promo code Derek at checkout. Click apply. Free fast shipping. Ronnie McMullen, always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Yes, yes, yes. Ronnie McMullen and GetTheTea.com. Life Change Tea. It will change your life. The market is fluctuating wildly right now. As everybody positions, we're expecting a decision literally at any moment, and any day. Whenever they probably have some sort of medical thing on the dementia scale of when Joe stands a chance of being lucid. Like, will he have 5 minutes of lucidity? Okay, start talking now. It's like contractions. If your contractions are not 5 minutes apart, if they're 10 minutes apart, you don't have to go to the hospital just yet. But if they get 5 minutes apart, then you should go to the hospital. Well, if Joe's ability to be lucid is longer than 5 minutes, then maybe he could string together a coherent announcement of his running mate. But if he can't, we just have to sit around and wait until he can. The market right now is favoring Susan Rice at 48 cents. She's up 10 cents on the day, whereas Kamala Harris at 38 cents, down 4 cents on the day. And number three with a bullet, well, it's a dud, is Val Demings at 9 cents. Not a lot of faith in Val Demings. And then there's Elizabeth Warren, Tammy Duckworth, Gretchen Whitmer, and so on. And Michelle Obama's up there, but that's a joke. So who will it be? Well, who cares? Let's be honest. In the grand scheme of things, you'd have to pay me a lot of money to vote for Joe Biden. And I live in a state that Joe Biden is going to win. I live in Maryland. And still, for $100, I wouldn't vote for Joe Biden. I wouldn't vote for Joe Biden on a dare, on a bet, anything. You get to seven figures, and then maybe you could get me to vote for Joe Biden. But that's about it. I'm a man of principle, damn it. So let's go through the top choices really quickly. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but just in case he does actually announce, you'll have my thoughts at the ready should he wake up and snap and go, whoa, Tammy Duckworth, and scream into a microphone. There's a good possibility, if you watch the announcement, that he'll get it wrong. So there's that kind of excitement that we haven't had before in a vice president, in a running mate announcement. But Susan Rice is at the top of the list right now. She was at number two yesterday, and Kamala Harris was at number one. Susan Rice is a good number two because she's full of number two. She is not particularly a good choice for several reasons. The first and foremost being she's never run for office. And that may seem weird, and considering that President Trump never run for office or anything like that, Donald Trump is a force of nature. Whether you love him or you hate him, you can't ignore him, and you watch him. That's the difference. The people who hate him spend as much time watching him as the people who adore him. So he commands attention, and he knows how to get it. Susan Rice exists. She's less exciting than the food that bears her last name. She really is the plain white rice of politics. What does she bring to the table? Her most noted accomplishment is going on all five Sunday shows right after the attack in Benghazi and lying to everybody about it. And doing so in an indifferent, arrogant way that was absurd. Well, this was caused by a video. The evidence that we have seen. This is a video. Yeah, videos, internet videos are huge in Libya when it was a failed state. Noted for its high-quality internet streaming services of obscure YouTube videos that nobody'd heard of until the Obama administration decided to cover their own ass and blame the deaths of Americans on it. That's not a particularly good feeling to give people. You know, you want someone to have an opinion, to have some sort of gut reaction to you that's positive, a warm vibe. Susan Rice is not warm. Susan Rice is not interesting. She's not a compelling speaker. She's rather boring. She's quite wealthy. She maxed out, she and her husband maxed out to the Biden Victory Fund, $24,000 each, I believe it was. You got that kind of money laying around. I don't really think that you're super relatable to the average blue-collar worker. That and, you know, the willing lying to the American public about the murder of Americans can seem to be a bit problematic with a lot of people. And never having campaigned, how does anybody know how Susan Rice is on a campaign stump? Not that there's going to be a lot of stumping going on. And that's another thing. You have to be compelling when sitting alone at a desk in front of a computer, or in this case, a tripod with a camera set up on it. You have to be able to inspire people. Susan Rice has never been inspiring. What does she do? Have you ever seen this woman speak? If you ever suffer from insomnia, put on a Susan Rice speech. It's a barn builder, not a barn burner. It's a barn slowly deteriorating over timer. So I just don't know. I mean, Joe Biden... One of the things about Joe Biden is he is wildly arrogant and horribly insecure. At least he comes off as arrogant. That he's insecure is without a doubt. Joe Biden wouldn't lie so much about his own life and his own history if he weren't wildly insecure about it. Why would you care? If you're comfortable in who you are, you don't have to say, I was involved in the civil rights marches. No, you weren't. You didn't give a shit about civil rights. You don't have to. You don't have to pretend you did. Okay, when you were younger, you were younger. You didn't care about much of anything, Joe. Just admit it. It's fine. We can move on. But no, he's the hero of his own story. I was out there marching. I was so upset about what I saw, what I heard from FDR on TV. Remember when he said that FDR used to go on TV and give speeches? And FDR died before TV was invented? I mean, those sorts of things. You don't make those kind of gaffes unless you're trying to prop yourself up, unless you're trying to build yourself up as something special and something awesome. And that's what Joe has a career of. So that Joe Biden wouldn't want to be outshined by his vice presidential nominee is, I think, abundantly clear. Susan Rice would not outshine Joe Biden. Susan Rice is one of the least compelling human beings you will ever come across in your life. For that very same reason, that's probably, to my mind, why she's at the top of the list right now. That's why Kamala Harris can't be the nominee. Now, Kamala Harris's story isn't compelling to me either. She grew up the child of two college professors. Wasn't exactly, you know, struggling to get by story. Rags to riches. It was, you know, really nice clothes to really nice clothes. Riches to more riches story. She also is able to string together a coherent sentence together, despite the annoying nature of her nasally voice and her... She's the only one who laughs at a Kamala Harris joke. Have you ever noticed that? Nobody else thinks Kamala Harris is funny except Kamala Harris. She likes to be the center of attention. She can throw a good jab in a debate every once in a while. She destroyed Joe Biden as a wild racist in one of the debates. We'll get to that in a bit. But rather effectively just kneecapped Joe as a wild. It didn't do any good for her, which is weird. It's almost like the Democrats. I love it. I love Democrats. You have to pick a woman and a woman of color to be your running mate. Really? Because you could have picked one. You could have picked one to be your nominee. For all the talk about all the diversity in the Democratic Party, never forget that they ended up with a 77-year-old rich white guy. We're the party of diversity. Now here's more of the same. Oh, okay. So Kamala Harris can actually string together a coherent sentence, but Kamala Harris's biggest strike against her is that she has a law enforcement background. In any other year and in a sane time, a sane Democratic Party, being of a law enforcement background without, you know, any scandals involved or anything, or major scandals or what have you, would be a big plus. Because Democrats are always accused of what when it comes to crime? Being soft on crime. Now, they've only ever been accused of that because it's absolutely 100% true, but at least they used to engage in plausible deniability and would have cover for plausible deniability of that. But they don't anymore because it's their party's platform. We must depopulate the prisons. We have mass incarceration. We need criminal justice reform. We just had some. We need more criminal justice reform. We must expunge the records of everybody everywhere who's ever been to prison and let everybody out. Meanwhile, there's story after story of these liberals letting people out of prison because of COVID-19, who then go on to murder somebody, who then go on to rape somebody again or whatever. And you're sitting there and you're going, I wouldn't trust these people to water my plants while I was away on vacation, let alone with my country. Those people are the people that Joe Biden is trying to appeal to. The people, not the people who wouldn't let him water the plants, but the people who want everybody out of prison. Somebody who put a bunch of people into prison might not go over too well with that group of people. Call me crazy, but it just might not be a good fit, you know? So you end up with this situation where you have the top two most popular choices, at least from betting circles. And betting circles, for all their faults, are a pretty good indicator of where the, much more than polling is, where the public is. Because you get it, people bet, people put money down on, based not on news reports, or at least not just news reports, but also on the conversations they've had with people, the things they've picked up on people. It's more of a gut feeling than anything else. And those two are the gut feelings. The only thing they have in common with number three, Val Demings, is their skin color. None of them on their own. One of them ran for president and didn't make it to Iowa. Didn't even make it to the calendar year 2020. She was such a wildly unpopular candidate and a failure on the campaign trail. She's the only one with national exposures, Kamala Harris. And Susan Rice, again, never ran for anything. And number three down there is Val Demings. Yeah, I'm going to say that name again. Val Demings. Anything? Does it register you with you at all? No. The only reason Val Demings is on the list is because she's black. Let's be honest. The same reason the top two are leading is the same reason that Val Demings is on the list at all. There's nothing more to say about Val Demings. Gretchen Whitmer, she at least brings a state with her. I couldn't tell you where Susan Rice lives. I don't care where Susan Rice lives, but I imagine it's someplace where Democrats dominate. Kamala Harris is California. If Joe Biden is worried about carrying California, then he needs to drop out of the race now because Democrats are going to carry California. Then you've got Gretchen Whitmer. At least she's got Michigan, the possibility of delivering Michigan. But she's such an awful human being and such a failure as governor. Now, she's wildly popular with Democrats because she's taken swipes at Donald Trump, which, again, when you really think about it, how low is the bar to be Joe Biden's running mate? Honestly, it's got to be a woman, preferably a woman of color, but we'll settle for a woman of no color. But it's definitely got to be a woman. So there goes half the population. Got to be a Democrat. There goes half that population. can't outshine Joe Biden. There goes 90% of that population. And has to be a down-the-line drone liberal interested more in their personal advancement than anything else. And then you get Gretchen Whitmer. She's left a soulless Vulcan who sounds vaguely Canadian, who is an American born, so she could end up serving as vice president legally. But what does she bring to the table? She brings nothing to the table. That brings us to the last one that I'm going to cover, because I don't think it's going to be Tammy Duckworth, and that's Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren at least brings the ability to raise money to it. She shores up the progressive shortcomings of Joe Biden. Now, he's pledged everything under the sun. You name a left-wing plan, and Joe's all for it now. But nobody believes him. Nobody believes Joe Biden. Nobody believes Joe Biden knows what he's talking about. And nobody certainly believes that when he does speak, that he's saying what he truly believes, because there's 47 years of him saying the exact opposite. So you can't put a lot of stock in what Joe says. Elizabeth Warren has something that the other candidates, Gretchen Whitmer doesn't have the track record. Val Demings is a non-entity. Kamala Harris doesn't have the track record, and she's got the criminal justice problem. And Susan Rice has never voted on any policy whatsoever. Nobody knows where she stands. And Joe Biden just thinks, well, she's black, she must agree with me down the line, which he clearly stated last week. Elizabeth Warren, at least to the progressive, I can't even call it a wing, the progressive half of the Democratic Party, there's no real question about whether or not Elizabeth Warren is on their team. If she's a nut job left winger, full down the line, full stop, she is. So that's what she brings to the table, being able to raise money and being able to placate the rabid progressive left that is unsure about Joe Biden. What she also brings with her, for her detriment, is a career of lying about being a Native American. She never was. She got hired from it. She used it to her advantage because she started using it to her advantage at a time long before anybody was able to check whether or not she was lying. So, like, yeah, oh, yes, I went, you could say I studied at Oxford if you were around in 1920. You could just read a book about Oxford, and you could probably bluff your way past most people, including some of the people who actually went to Oxford. Why? Because there's nothing to challenge it against. People would just assume you're telling the truth, because why would anybody lie about it? And you go about your business having fooled all the people that you boxed at Oxford. Wah, 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 wah. Well, now it's pretty abundantly clear and easy to test whether or not somebody is Native American. Are you a member of a tribe? Let's go to the internet. And then she said, well, I never claimed to be a member of a tribe. And there she is saying that she's Native American. Our Texas Bar Association, she was listed as a Chippewa, I believe, in the Native American cookbook Powwow Chow. Seriously, she submitted recipes to a Native American cookbook called Powwow Chow, and she plagiarized them. They came from a French cookbook. Like, if you're going to plagiarize recipes for a Chinese cookbook, you wouldn't, you know, your recipe wouldn't be hamburger. It wouldn't be, here's how to make a really good Chinese hamburger, and then it's just how you assemble a Big Mac. Two all-beef patty, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions on a sesame seed bun. There you go. There's my submission to the Chinese cookbook. I think people would look at you a little weird. But Elizabeth Warren, yeah, if you're going to plagiarize for a Chinese recipe, you might want to, I don't know, order some Kung Pao chicken and try and dissect it and figure out what's in it. Elizabeth Warren just submitted straight-up French recipes to Pow Wow Chow because she's not only a crooked human being, she's incredibly lazy. So there you go. She thought she could get away with it because when she started, there was no way to fathom the internet. There was no way to imagine that 23andMe and Ancestry would exist, where you just swab your mouth, send it off, and boom, suddenly you know your DNA makeup. None of that. She's never even partially explained it. She just goes on about high cheekbones. My daddy said, my pawpaw said my meemaw had high cheekbones. And everybody who's in my family who's dead and could possibly verify this, I'll just call them racists and say that that's why my mamaw and papaw weren't able to have the wedding ceremony they wanted or something. Her story is so freaking stupid, it's ridiculous. So this is the cream of the crop of the Democratic Party. Now, there's always a possibility, I got to throw it out there, got to have my CYA moment. There's always a possibility that Joe picks somebody else. It's not very likely. Who else would it be? Who on this list are you going, but what about, but what about, but what about? There's nobody. When you limit yourself to gender and race, really, but mostly gender, you limit your options. You limit the mystery. You limit the excitement. And so this is what they've got. Not a lot going on up there. If I had to bet, I still got to say it's Kamala Harris. I think he's going to get a lot of pressure from his campaign to pick Kamala Harris. Honestly, though, if I were Kamala Harris, I don't know if I'd go for it. I don't understand why anybody wants to be, unless you really think you got a shot at being president. I'm not sure why anybody would want to be vice president, except Dick Cheney. He didn't want to have anything to do with it. But it just seems like a disaster waiting to happen. You have to clean up after Joe Biden's messes all the time. And I can't imagine Biden's handlers wanting, seeking, or desiring the input of their vice president, who constitutionally has no authority whatsoever. I think Joe Biden's handlers want to handle Joe Biden and take care of all the stuff themselves. So you're really just going to slip back into the going to funerals role of the vice president. That just seems awful when you could be a United States senator. Speaking of Joe Biden, I want to play this clip because this was making the rounds on conservatives. Nick Gillespie, the poobah over at Reason Magazine, tweeted out an article yesterday that I hadn't seen before, and then the story I'd completely forgotten about. Everybody remembers Joe Biden talking about, well, make sure you put the record player on for kids so they hear talking and hear words. And the whole thing that got the attention of most people was Joe Biden's talking about record players. What in the hell planet is Joe Biden living on talking about? Who has a record player now except for really weird people who collect LPs? No offense to really weird people who collect LPs. It's just, you're not in the majority by any stretch of the imagination. Same with people who collect CDs. Like, they're done. It's over. Well, it was a report or an article from the Lefty Intercept, which was about how Joe Biden gave an answer that was so wildly racist and offensive to a question about race and a question about reparations in one of the debates, that he is almost disqualified from being president. And I read this and I was like, I don't remember that. What was so awful? Because then they had the transcript, but I wanted to see the video myself just in case there was something like this. We got to find out what is really said, what was really said, to really assess this thing. So I went out and I tracked down the audio. Now, it was actually really hard to find this audio. I had to cut it together from a Sam Cedar, who's a big lib podcaster, a Sam Cedar podcast from then. He played it in chunks, and I had to cut it out and then cut out his commentary and then splice it all back together, because he was bitching the same way that Ryan Grimm at The Intercept was bitching about Joe Biden being horribly, horribly racist. Here's what Ryan Grimm wrote at The Intercept about Biden's answer. The piece is, Joe Biden's stunningly racist answer on the legacy of slavery has been overlooked. Now, this is September 13th. The debate was on September 12th. Of 2019. And he's right that nobody looked at it this way at the time that I saw. Now, I've since seen discussions, Zerlina Maxwell on MSNBC a couple of days later, bitching about Joe Biden's racist answer. By the way, she's all on board with Joe Biden now. It's kind of funny how quickly these race hustlers, there's no bigger race hustler than Zerlina Maxwell, or very few bigger race hustlers than Zerlina Maxwell. And now she's all on board. She guzzled that Kool-Aid so fast. Oh, Joe Biden, he's the best. You're calling him a racist back in September of last year. Your whole identity is based on race. I mean, my God, she wrote a book called The End of White Politics. It didn't sell, but she wrote a book called that. And she's now down with Joe. Brian Grimm writes, for the Washington Post, former Vice President Joe Biden delivered a quote, the kind of performance his supporters have been waiting for, a combative when needed and in the thick of the action throughout during the Thursday's presidential debate. Cable news commentators largely agreed. The New York Times was slightly less kind, subtitling its analysis, strong start, but a stumble over race. That stumble, Grimm writes, happened when Biden was asked about the legacy of slavery and gave a meandering answer that, in part, lectured black people on their parenting abilities. It's true. I read this before I found the clip, and I was like, what in the hell did he say? Well, Ryan Grimm, after we'll play it, but Ryan Grimm, after he writes the transcript out, says, the thoroughly racist paternalism came at the end of Biden's answer, at which point many viewers had likely zoned out. It was not adequately highlighted in the post-debate coverage, so it's worth taking a closer look at. In response to a question about the legacy of slavery, Biden said, quote, we bring social workers into homes of parents to help them deal with how to raise their children. It's not that they don't want to help, that they don't want they don't quite know what to do, end quote. Now, you don't remember that, do you? Because everybody made fun of the record player bit. So without any further ado, this is like a minute and a half long or something like that, and there's the question involved in it. I wanted you to hear it because I was shocked at just how bad the answer was. And then I was retroactively shocked at how little coverage it got, because it seems like it should have warranted some more coverage, to my mind, considering how much lefties groused about it. Now, I don't expect lefties to grouse about it anymore because they're in the tank for Joe Biden, but liberal journalists were rather disgusted by this answer. And I will say this right last thing before I play it for you. At the end, when they try to cut him off, and this is taking place at a historically black college. I forget which one, doesn't matter. But the crowd is mostly black college students. Joe Biden at the end is cut off because of time. And he finally shows some energy and is able to get a little coherence. He says, no, I'm going to take all the time. I'm going to take more time. Everybody else has been going double, whine, piss, moan. But then notice what happens right after that. In the lead up to his time expiring, note that he was asked a question about race and reparations and the legacy of slavery. He somehow, after that exchange with the moderator, starts talking about Maduro and Hispanics, which has nothing to do with anything, which is how Joe Biden got himself into trouble talking to Hispanic groups last week when he, apropos of nothing, black people all think alike. He just seems to lose his train of thought and then just, I don't know, just keep rambling. It's very weird answer. This whole answer is very weird. So listen to it. Pay attention to it. Here it goes.
I want to come to you and talk to you about inequality in schools and race. In a conversation about how to deal with segregation in schools back in 1975, you told a reporter, I don't feel responsible for the sins of my father and grandfather. I feel responsible for what the situation is today, for the sins of my own generation, and I'll be damned if I feel responsible to pay for what happened 300 years ago. You said that some 40 years ago. But as you stand here tonight, What responsibility do you think that Americans need to take to repair the legacy of slavery in our country?
Well, they have to deal with look, there is institutional segregation in this country. And from the time I got involved, I started dealing with that. Redlining, banks, making sure that we are in a position where, look, we talk about education. I propose that what we take is those very poor schools, the Title I schools, triple the amount of money we spend, from $15 to $45 billion a year. Give every single teacher a raise, so the equal raise of getting out of the $60,000 level. Number two, make sure that we bring in to help the teachers deal with the problems that come from home. The problems that come from home, we have one school psychologist for every 1,500 kids in America today. It's crazy. The teachers are recovering. I'm married to a teacher. My deceased wife is a teacher. They have every problem coming to them. We have to make sure that every single child does, in fact, have 3-, 4-, and 5-year-olds go to school, not daycare, school. We bring social workers into homes of parents to help them deal with how to raise their children. It's not that they don't want to help. They don't know quite what to do. Play the radio. Make sure the television, make sure you have the record player on at night, the phone. Make sure the kids hear words. A kid coming from a very poor school, or a very poor background, will hear 4 million words fewer spoken by the time they get there. There's
Thank
so
you, Mr.
much
Vice
we.
President.
No, I'm going to go like the rest of them do, twice over, okay? Because here's the deal. The deal is that we've got this a little backwards. And by the way, in Venezuela, we should be allowing people to come here from Venezuela. I know Maduro. I've confronted Maduro. Number two, you talk about the need to do something in Latin America. I'm the guy that came up with $740 million to see to it those three countries, in fact, change their system so people don't have a chance to leave. You're all acting like we just discovered this yesterday.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President.
What in the hell was he trying to convey there? What? Well, you want to blah, blah, blah. Everything under the sun, what are you going to do? What about the legacy of slavery? Well, the schools. Okay, yeah, the schools suck. You're against charter schools. You're against school choice. So you just want to throw more money at schools that suck. Okay, that's interesting. If you had a rusted out, bonded up piece of shit Pinto that doesn't run, you can throw all kinds of money at it. You could probably get it puttering down the street, but is that really going to serve anybody well? Here's your first car, kid. We threw $300 million at this Pinto. It should be good for another 2,500 miles. Congratulations. Good luck to you. And now drive to California, 3,000 miles away. And you're like, wait, what? But then to sit there and say, we need to send social workers into the houses to teach black people how to raise their kids because they don't know how to do it. You got to make sure they hear words. So constantly keep the TV on. Isn't that, you know, a part of the problem is that people watch too much TV? They're too dependent on technology. They aren't actually using their words to, I don't know. What's the thing I'm thinking of? Oh, yeah, talk to another human being. You know what? Also teaches people words, Joe, is teaching them to read, right? They could do that, but that again falls back into the education, which is a bit of the problem. You just tripling the salary of a shitty teacher just means you have a very happy and wealthy and well-pensioned shitty teacher for 30 years. Probably not, again, going to solve the problem you claim to care so deeply about. But to sit there and say, look, we need to teach black people how to raise their kids because they don't know, is where the left had, it's in past tense, a significant problem with what Joe Biden was saying there. Now, the best thing Joe Biden has going for him is that he tossed such a wild word salad there that it'd be tough to sort of cut that into a campaign ad. It's possible. I'm not saying it can't be done. But it'd be tough to cut that into a campaign ad because he's all over the freaking map. But then again, at the end, did you notice that? No, I'm going to take all double the time. Everybody else taking double the time? Double the time, I'll do that. Then he starts talking about Maduro and Venezuela, and what in the hell was he talking about to a question that was asked about slavery and how to repair the damage from slavery for people who've never been through it and don't know anybody who did. That is everything the Joe Biden campaign is in one couple-minute clip. It just goes off on a tangent, goes off on another tangent, says something wildly out of date and old-timey. Well, you got to take the girl out courting, and you've got to, you know, get the carriage and get the horse if you're going to go and pick up the girl. That's basically what he said. You got to put the record player on and the phonograph. He almost said the phonograph, which I thought was before his time, but apparently not. You had to put the phonograph on, and you got to crank the thing, and you get right up there. And Mr. Edison did a wonderful thing, and you put the cylinder on. They're like, Joe, it's 2019, pal. You need to at least we don't expect you to be up to date with the latest, greatest, but you should at least get into the 21st century, or at least the late 20th century. But this was problematic for the left not that long ago. Again, the piece at The Intercept was Joe Biden's stunningly racist answer on the legacy of slavery has been overlooked. Now, I guarantee you it's going to be overlooked significantly now that he's the nominee and he's getting ready to announce his running mate. But it is shocking. And it says, Nicole Hannah Jones, a journalist leading the New York Times Magazine 1619 Project. This was even before that piece of crap was released. On the legacy of 400 years of slavery and its aftermath in America, said Biden's remark was revealing. Quote, he talked about poverty, social workers needing to help families raise their kids, and debunked science on vocabulary deficits. He assumed we'd all understand he meant black folks without even saying it, as if black is synonymous with poverty and dysfunction. Another excellent point. I'll never say that sentence again when it comes to anything related by Nicole Hannah Jones, who blocked me on Twitter a long time ago. I don't even know who the hell she was. But she's right there. If you notice, he's talking about poor kids. He was asked about black kids. Remember when Joe famously said, look, white kids are just as smart white kids are just as smart as poor kids or as black kids or whatever. He said poor kids when he meant to say black kids. But he's equated the two because in his mind, all black people are poor. All black people need to be taken care of by the government. He doesn't even care. He doesn't even notice it anymore. Now, all this stuff was noticed by leftists back in September of 2019. How much of this do you think will be remarked upon in September of 2020? I bet none of it. I bet none of it. Author Anand Grihanga, whoever, flagged the moment. Quote, this is not one of the most explicitly racist moments of all time in a Democratic primary debate. Is this not one of the most explicitly racist moments of all time in a Democratic primary debate? Asked about his past comments denying responsibility as a white man for America's sins, he gives an answer insinuating that black parents don't know how to raise kids. Well, Anand, he's not responsible for the sins of other white people any more than you're responsible for the sins of other people who look like you. And yes, I guarantee that people look like you have committed lots of sins. Everybody did. And the black people alive today are not responsible for the sins of black people alive 1,000 years ago or 3,000 years ago when they created slavery or whenever it was. We are not responsible for that crap, but the leftists want us, everybody, to be. And they used to be pissed off at Joe Biden. They used to openly call him a racist. And now he'll probably pick a black woman to run with him, and he will be celebrated as so woke and so enlightened. And oh my goodness, isn't this a wonderful thing? Such a hero Joe Biden is for picking a black woman to run with him when given his past and given his recent past of some really racist answers and statements, he almost had no choice. Which, how would you like to be the candidate? Hey, would you like to be my running mate? I need a black woman to run with me, because I've got some shit to make up for. Does that inspire you? if you're that woman? Does that inspire you if you're that person? I don't think it does. But then again, most of anything of what Democrats say doesn't inspire me to do anything except engage in involuntary bulimia. What are you going to do? Uncle Joe, racist. First, the president. President Trump, the Trump campaign has a special offer just for you. President Trump really wants to give you a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat. He wants to make sure that the lucky winner is one of the top supporters he has. So be sure to enter soon because this is an opportunity you don't want to miss. The offer is only going to a select group of supporters, and you are one of them. All you have to do is text Derek to 88022 today for your chance to win a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat and own a piece of history. Again, that's Derek to 88022 to enter to win this contest and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for four more years. This was paid for by Donald J. Trump for President Incorporated. Speaking of Uncle Joe racist, we now have a decision. Yes, I had to wait a couple of hours because, well, the word was leaking. I love how these campaigns are like, you sign up for my text and you'll be the first to know. I swear, I'll tell you, I whisper sweet nothings into your ear and only your ear. And then it leaks out through the media. Joe Biden has chosen Kamala Harris, and all you hear is, oh my God, she's a moderate. She's a pragmatic centrist. Bullshit. She is none of those things. She's as left-wing as they come. The Associated Press called her, said she had a centrist record. The New York Times says she was a pragmatic centrist. If you go back and look at her record, it's not particularly pragmatic or centrist. I guess Joe Biden ultimately wanted somebody who was responsible for putting more black men in prison than he was with the crime bill. So he went to the top prosecutor in California who put a ton of black men in prison for misdemeanors and things now that she says shouldn't be crimes at all. You put a lot of people in prison for them. You haven't really come to terms with that. So good luck with that. George Conway, Kellyanne Conway's fat husband, who looks like a Fred Flintstone with worse hair, he's quoting a piece from the San Francisco Gate about how Donald Trump had donated $6,000 to Kamala Harris's Senate campaign back in 2000, or to campaigns 2011 and 2012. And it's like, oh, but don't worry. He reports, or 2013 and 2011. And then Ivanka gave her $2,000 in 2014. So Harris didn't use Trump's donations. Rather, in 2015, a year after she'd already been elected and was working toward a Senate run, she gave the $6,000 to a nonprofit that works to secure civil rights for Central Americans. Anybody believe that she let money sit around as she was running for attorney general? That she let money sit around since 2011 and said, no, don't spend that. Just in case Donald Trump turns out to be a monster, put that money in a drawer and we'll keep it for, you know, 4 years and we'll see what happens. And then Donald Trump runs for president as a Republican and suddenly, I told you I was right to lock that money in a drawer. No, she spent that money as quickly as she got that money. She raised other money and gave that away so that she could then say, oh, I didn't take his money. I gave it away. That's how politics works. It's such garbage. The real question for Kamala Harris is, if Donald Trump was history's greatest monster, why were you asking him and his family for money in the first place? Mr. Trump, would you like to donate to my campaign? I don't know that I'll use it. I probably won't. I'll probably just keep it in a safety deposit box for when you later turn out to be a monster. But for now, I could sure use that money. The liberals think we're stupid. And that's because they are stupid. That's because that's how they are and that's who they are. So Kamala Harris is the choice. Let's see. During the campaign when she was running and she didn't make it to early December, she dropped out because nobody was giving her money. and she was a horrible candidate. She had attacked Joe Biden as a racist, a guy who hangs around with segregationists. We'll have all this audio on the show tomorrow. There's not enough time left in the show to get it all today, but because there's just that much of it. But she said he pals around with segregationists, that it hurt her, that he hung around with people who wouldn't allow her to be in the United States Senate, and that he opposed the busing programs that helped her get an education. Now, she was full of crap on that one. She was the child of two college professors. She didn't grow up hand to mouth. She didn't grow up poor. I love the idea. All you hear is she'll be the first African-American to run for vice president. African-American woman. Oh, the first African-American woman. She's actually Caribbean. Her father's from Jamaica. Her father told the media last year that they are descendants of slave owners. So I suppose she could make history in the sense that she could write herself a reparations check. You know, hey, I believe in reparations, so I'm going to take this $100 out of my left pocket, put it in my right pocket, and I'll lead by example and hope that everybody else will follow my wonderful example. But you only hear, oh, she's the first black woman to run. Oh, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. She's half Indian. Her mother is from India. Both of her parents immigrated to the United States, by the way. We'll hear all about, oh, my immigrant journey, my first generation this, and oh, first, if you could copyright first generation right now, you'd probably make a fortune, because they're going to jam that down here. I'm a first generation American. I'm not sure the American part took, but you're a citizen, I'll give you that. But to sit there and ignore her mother. No, she's an African American. She's an Indian American, too. She's just as much. 50-50. But they ignore it, just like they did with Barack Obama. He's the first African American president. Okay, but he's also half white. Do you have to crap on it? His father was the one that took off and wanted nothing to do with him. His mother took off, too. But years later, she stuck around at least for a little while before she went chasing off with another man and said, oh, this kid's an anchor. Get rid of it. To the grandparents. But it's amazing watching the media cherry pick things, like that clip I played of Joe earlier. That will all be memory hold. I'm glad I captured it, because I imagine the audio will quickly disappear, even, you know, as if somebody brings it up and it gets enough play, Joe Biden's horrible, horrible answer. The internet will make sure you can't find it. Oh, it'll be out there. It'll just take forever to find. It took me probably 45 minutes to find it. I could find the clip of the record player, play the record player, but I couldn't find the whole thing, and I wanted the whole thing to give it all context. It took me forever to find it. Even ABC News, which hosted the debate and posted most of the stuff up there, I couldn't find it on their site. Not that it's not on their YouTube channel. It's that Google makes it really difficult to find things that are inconvenient for Democrats. So I imagine most of the things that Kamala Harris has said about Joe Biden will be just like that, memory hold. Because why? Because they're inconvenient. They don't help the cause. They don't help the Democratic Party. Therefore, they must be destroyed. It is quite a little feat and quite a little racket that the left has set up there. But in watching Twitter, in watching the reaction on social media to the selection of Kamala Harris, is funny, because there's a lot of dirt. There's a lot of baggage surrounding Kamala Harris. She first got her first political appointment by Willie Brown, then the mayor of San Francisco, who was married. I believe he's still married. But Kamala Harris was one of his side pieces. Willie liked the ladies. Willie liked the ladies. And Kamala liked Willie's Willie, or at least liked what Willie's Willie could get her, should she be nice to Willie's Willie. And so she got her first political job through that, being a side piece. And now She's back on the national stage being a side piece, differently. But since Kamala came into politics being groped, it's only fitting that she's the perfect fit for creepy, creepy, gropey, sniffy, huggy, touchy, feely Uncle Joe. They're a ticket made in heaven. She also tweeted out that the attack on Jussie Smollett was an attempted modern lynching. I mean, she's got a hell of a history. It makes you really look at the rest of the field and go, what did they not bring to the table? What were they missing? What was it that they were looking at them and going, holy crap, I got to go with Kamala Harris. At a time when they're trying to appeal to black voters desperately, you get the one candidate who put more black people in prison than Joe Biden. That's who you choose. Okay, there you go. And I'll tell you this. I don't think many hosts will tell you this, but I get a ton of emails, both from the radio and from the podcast and messages through social media and everything. When Kamala Harris was running, and she was running as the first African-American woman to try and win the nomination of the Democratic Party, I would hear a lot from black women, oddly enough. I don't know anybody why anybody's offended by this, but they were mad that she was calling herself and she was being referred to as an African-American woman, that she wasn't African-American. There are long diatribes out there on social media where Kamala Harris isn't an African-American. She's Caribbean and she's Indian. Some people were mad that she married a white guy. Now, I'm not really sure why anybody cares about that, but what people get upset about is unique to each one of them. And you have this situation where Joe Biden picks her. Nobody likes it. Think of it this way. If Kamala Harris had a base of support, she would have made it past the first week of December. It was coasting time. All she had to do was just stay in the race and not drop out. Visit Iowa two or three times. She had the money to do that. She could have laid off staff and actually been around for a vote. She didn't make it. It was that bad. Donors had abandoned her, and the media had sort of turned on her until she dropped out. Then they said, oh my God, Kamala Harris is so wonderful. And look, they didn't cover her. And then when she dropped out, I said, why did she drop out? Like, well, because you guys helped bury her. Because your chosen candidate at the time was Joe Biden. He's the establishment guy. And she attacked him pretty viciously, accused him of being a racist. By the way, she also said publicly that she believes Tara Reid, the woman who accused Joe Biden of dropping a digit on her against her will in a Senate hallway in the Capitol building. So that's going to be, maybe it's a good thing that coronavirus is happening for Joe Biden because they can't campaign together. Could you imagine the two of them at a podium trying to answer questions? And somebody says, I mean, question probably wouldn't be asked, but somebody raise their hand. Senator Harris, you said that you believed that Joe Biden shoved his fingers into Tara Reid and kissed her forcibly in the hallway. He said you believed that. Now you're his running mate, holding that very hand above your heads in an attempted victory here. Is that a little gross for you at a minimum? Do you care at all to try to explain that one away? Not really sure how you explain that one away. There's so much more to say on this that I'll get to some of it tomorrow. The rest of it I'll reserve for the Saturday Curse Show because it's tough not to really get it. It's going to be fun. Let's just say it's really going to be fun. And if you think finger bang is crossing a line, boy, howdy, you won't hear anything like that on Sunday. You'll hear much, much, much worse. The website to get to that is patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. But yeah, Biden Harris. There you go, Biden Harris, the cackle and the crackle. The Trump campaign has a special offer just for you. President Trump really wants to give you a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat. He wants to make sure that the lucky winner is one of his top supporters. So be sure to enter soon, because this opportunity is one you don't want to miss. The offer is only going to a select group of supporters, and you're one of them. All you have to do is text Derek, D-E-R-E-K, to 88022 today for your chance to win a signed 2020 Make America Great Again hat and own a piece of history. Again, that's Derek, D-E-R-E-K, to 88022 to enter to win this contest and join President Trump in the fight to keep America great for four more years. This was paid for by Donald J. Trump for President Incorporated. Ooh, now it's Biden Harris for president or whatever. I don't know. God, what a dumb choice, I think. But good. I mean, he could have picked a blank slate. He could have picked somebody that there wasn't a treasure trove of information out there about, especially in the wheelhouse of Democratic hate. And that could have not worked out. I don't know why his handlers picked her. I'll speculate about it. I'll watch the coverage. I'll see the stories and everything. And we'll meet back here tomorrow morning or afternoon or evening or whenever you listen to this, to discuss it on the Thursday edition of the show. Thank you for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.